When even my easy run became impossible, my buddies told me to go to VA. I don't know exactly what I was exposed to while I was serving, but I know that because of the PACT Act, I qualify for VA healthcare and disability benefits. I get treatment from top doctors trained in military exposures, and I get monthly tax-free disability compensation. With VA healthcare and benefits, I can keep going. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, April 7th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking all about Universal's new Epic Universe theme park. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
All right, Jacob, you just got back from a whirlwind trip to Universal Studios Florida in Orlando, where you visited Epic Universe, which is the new Universal expansion. Is that what you would call it? You're much more a theme park guy than I am. Do I have the terminology right there?
It's a full-on new theme park. The Universal Orlando Resort now has three theme parks, including Epic Universe and a water park. And this is the first major theme park to be built in North America in, I think, nearly 25 years.
Wow.
Since Disney California Adventure in 2001. So it's kind of a big deal in the theme park world because parks of this scale don't get built very often. I mean, it's like I said, it's been since 1998 for Disney, and it's been, you know, almost as long for Universal if you don't include their water park from about 10 years ago. So this was... And also to be clear, the park isn't actually open yet. It opens on May 22nd, and we were invited out there for a media day. And so it was, goodness, I want to say probably close to 200 folks from across, you know, traditional outlets, online, YouTube, even our old buddy Peter Serretta, formerly of Slash Film, who now runs, you know, Ordinary Adventures on YouTube. He was there to cover it, and we hung out for a bit, and we were able to share some thoughts. So yeah, it was definitely a big media blitz, and if you want to see photos and images and video, those are now out there from the people who were there for video. But I did review the park in its current state. It's in technical rehearsals right now, which means that right now only Universal Studios employees and their families and friends are allowed to attend ahead of the grand opening, as they, you know, put the rides and attractions through their paces, sort of stress test it, see what's working, see what's not. And as part of the media day, I put this in my written review on the site on slashfilm.com, which you can go read if you want to read, you know, probably me going a little too long about a new theme park. We were essentially allowed to experience this under ideal circumstances. The park was very crowded because, you know, it was a weekend, and because there are a lot of Universal Studios employees who bring a lot of their friends and family to try it out. So we get to see the park, you know, with a lot of people in it, but also we were, you know, literally guided by Universal employees to make sure that we saw as much as possible and we were able to experience as much as possible. So when I discuss the park today, I want to make it very clear that I'm discussing an ideal scenario. I can't talk about park operations fully. I can't say what the park will be like on opening day or even opening weeks when the real crush arrives. But I can speak about the attractions and the designs and the lands of Epic Universe in a vacuum.
Yeah, that's good context to have. Like, for example, did you have to wait in line for anything, or was that guide that you were talking about able to just get you to the front of the line of every attraction?
We were able to skip lines, but in a lot of cases, we made requests to explore the lines a little bit and see as much as we could, because Epic Universe has great lines. I mean, this is kind of the new theme park thing, and Universal has kind of led the way on this, starting with, they weren't the first ones to do an immersive queue, but I do think that their first Harry Potter ride, Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey, which opened in 2010, had the kind of ride queue where waiting in line was an absolute experience that was kind of not vital to enjoying the ride, but really enhanced it. And that philosophy is present throughout here. So I'm not going to say, you know, every single ride deserves to have you wait in line, but I will say that there were times where we were actively like, hey, can we double back and actually see the line a bit, because we were so impressed by what we were seeing.
Cool. Okay. So why don't you lay out sort of like the broad strokes for me, Jacob? Because as you know, I've been to a handful of theme parks, but I'm not like a huge theme park person. I imagine our listenership, it falls somewhere in between you who like keeps up with theme park news and blogs and stuff like that, and me who is just like vaguely fluent in all this kind of stuff. So yeah, just give me like an overview and then maybe take me land by land or piece by piece or however you want to go.
Yeah, so Epic Universe, like I said, it's a full-fledged theme park. It's not just an addition to the other two existing parks, Islands of Adventure and Universal Studios Florida are the other two parks. And this one is a few miles away. Like it's 4 miles away from the other parks. You can take a shuttle to get there. It's nearby some new hotels as well. And it's very much in the vein of what modern major theme park design is about, which is bringing, I hate this phrase so much, but bringing IPs to life, which one of those things where if it wasn't done so well here, it would make me shudder a little bit, but it is done well here. And the idea about Epic Universe is that you are entering sort of a space fantasy themed central hub area called Celestial Park. And I'll get to Celestial Park a little bit later. But the idea is that this, from this magical sci-fi realm, you can enter portals into various strange and wondrous worlds. And the four worlds surrounding Celestial Park are Isle of Berk, inspired by How to Train Your Dragon, the 1920s Wizarding France, technically from the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movies, but there's a bigger Harry Potter connection there that I'll get to in a moment. Dark Universe, which is Universal Monsters, and Super Nintendo World, which is actually the very similar and in many ways identical to the Super Nintendo worlds available in other Universal parks. So that's the one area of the park that is not completely brand new. Everything else here is exclusive of this park. And that's the basic setup. So should I just walk you through my day, essentially, Ben?
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
All right. So we start off at Isle of Berk, which, like I said, is How to Train Your Dragon. It is, for those of you who are movie nerds or animation nerds, this one is set specifically between the events of the second and third film. So when you're walking in here, you're essentially filling in a gap between those films. And this is a really lovely experience. The first thing you notice about every single land in Epic Universe is that Universal Creative has really gone above and beyond on theming and design and creating a sense of space. I mean, just it's not just a sense of recognition. It's not just a sense of, oh, that's the thing I recognize from a movie. It is taking things you may recognize from the movie and making it be a place where you want to be and a place where it feels natural and real. I mean, so much of my time between rides was spent like just looking and sometimes trying to find a place where I can sit and just observe. And Isle of Berk is especially neat because its main ride is a roller coaster called Hiccup's Wing Gliders, which is essentially, it's a family-friendly, you know, roller coaster that wraps all around the park. It goes above it, below it, through it, across it. And because it's always on the move, there's a constant sense of flight to the entire area. Everything feels like it's always moving. And that's on top of animatronic dragons who are stationed all around. There are costume dragon characters being escorted by, you know, people dressed up as characters from the movie. There are even little robotic drone dragons who are baby dragons who get escorted out for photo ops. The whole area just feels alive and colorful, and it's just one. It kind of set a good standard for the day where I'm sitting there looking at this world brought to life, and it's not my favorite land of the bunch because I have my own personal preferences in terms of, you know, what I like. But if I was a fan of these films more than I was, I like them just fine. But if you're a super fan, it really feels special. And there's so much care and attention to detail. Most of the rides here are family friendly. The roller coaster is very, very good. There's a live stage show called The Untrainable Dragon that was really technically impressive. It had it was one of those things where it's a real showstopper in terms of its effects. But this was the first time where I kind of sat there feeling kind of astonished during the day. And I was astonished a lot during this day because I kind of had a hard time believing what they had pulled off visually. And Ben, are you a fan of these movies at all? Like, do they mean anything to you?
So I really love the first one, and I think the other two are like pretty solid, but I have not revisited them since I saw them in theaters. I have zero interest in seeing the live action remake or whatever that's coming out soon, but it's clear to me that Universal thinks they have a hit on their hands there because not only did they recently announced that a live-action How to Train Your Dragon 2 is already in the works, but they dumped all these resources into building out Isle of Berk at Epic Universe, so they clearly know this is a beloved land, a beloved franchise they have on their hands there. And so, yeah, I know that like there's a huge fandom, and I would say I'm a big fan of the first movie, but maybe not the sequels.
Yeah, this is one of those things where I think it may even play to like, in the same way I've known people who visited the Avatar section, Pandora at Walt Disney World, who've never seen an Avatar film, but were still like really immersed and impressed by it. I think this is a similar thing where, do you need to know who Toothless the Dragon is to want to get your picture with him? Probably not, because once you see that the giant life-size animatronic toothless robot they trot out for you to get your picture with him, you'll want to be in that picture. Like I said, so the highlight here is that really terrific roller coaster, but just a thing of beauty, man. What's unique is that it's not like there's a consistent one style to Epic Universe. Each land is so different and based on such a different franchise or series that like I can't even like say, oh, clearly the same person designed this that doesn't work on other sections, because it doesn't. It truly feels like you're walking into a world. I mean, I'm going to get into the theme park weeds here for a second, but a very traditional theme park design is the hub and spoke model at Disneyland, established in the 50s, where you walk into a main central area and you can split off into various sections and all the sections kind of blend together. Epic Universe is different in that you literally walk through a portal, a themed tunnel that provides an atmospheric change. You walk through it and there's sound and there's music. And once you go through that tunnel, you are in a new area. You are in this land. And there are some areas where sight lines are unavoidable, where you can still see a hotel or another roller coaster or something from a different area. But most of the time when you're in Epic Universe, you feel like you've actually transported yourself into another area. And it also means that, you know, you can't walk from Berk into Dark Universe. Like they're completely disconnected. But that ends up leading to a theme park where each themed land doesn't feel like it's just, you know, one area next to another. It feels like you've actually walked. I feel like you've traveled. And that's like a silly thing to say. And that's why I kind of want to jump over to the next section, which is technically called The Wizarding World of Harry Potter, The Ministry of Magic, which is a confusing name, which I'll get to in a second, because it is the mainland is not the Ministry of Magic. It is 1920s Wizarding Paris from the Fantastic Beasts films. But this is the point where I turned to our Universal guide, who's with us all day, and I was just kind of flabbergasted, and I said, I don't feel like I'm in Florida anymore, because I do not care about the Fantastic Beasts movies in any way whatsoever. But I immediately cared that I was in 1920s Wizarding Magical Paris. And I've been on the record. I have very complex thoughts on the Harry Potter franchise. I cannot endorse J.K. Rowling's beliefs, but there's no getting around that the world that from the Harry Potter films and books matters to people, and as much as I try to fight it, it matters to me. And this is the kind of place we can get lost. The sight lines in this one are truly perfect. I felt like I looked up, I looked down, I looked around, and I felt like I was in a new place. And there's so much shopping and so many restaurants and so much detail. There's so much to see and do in terms of just existing in this space. It's probably a good thing. There aren't that many actual attractions. There are two attractions here. God, my French is going to kill me here. Le Cirque Anou. It is the live action stage show. It's themed after a traveling circus. And it really feels old school Universal. If you're like me, you remember Universal attractions from the like 90s and early 2000s, where there was like live actors walking you through spaces, interacting with robots and screens and puppets. This is essentially the modern version of that. It's essentially a story that takes place at a magical circus. There are a lot of magical monsters, and there are live actors, and there are puppets, and there are people in costume, and there are giant animatronics, and there are projections, and it's such a technical feat that I forgive it for being a Fantastic Beasts themed show, because there is a point where like you realize, oh, this is pretty directly connected to the Fantastic Beasts franchise, but no spoilers beyond that. And I'm like, and I just didn't care about that, but I also found myself really invested in seeing how they pulled off all the techniques and all the and all the illusions and all the robots, you know, all the things that I like as a theme park nerd. But this is where it gets confusing. You can tell that they probably started planning this land before the Fantastic Beasts movies petered out and didn't even finish, because they have this masterful 1920s wizarding Paris. But then if you know your Harry Potter lore, you know you can transport through space using a flu network. And if you go use the flu network, you find yourself suddenly in the area that's the land's named after, the Ministry of Magic, the seat of government in London in the main Harry Potter film and book franchise. How do you transport yourself from 1920s Paris to modern day London for this ride? I do not know. When I asked the Universal rep, they shrugged it off and explained, oh, well, you know, magic. Because clearly they initially designed a Fantastic Beasts land and then realized nobody wanted a Fantastic Beasts ride. So they decided to make another big Harry Potter ride. If you're willing to forgive that weird leap, I will say that they literally recreated the Ministry of Magic sets from the movies. If you remember the giant sweeping lobbies and offices and halls, it's staggering what they built here. It really feels like they're just showing off at this point. This is Universal's third Harry Potter themed land, following Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley. And what they've learned in those areas pays off here in such a huge way. Just walking through this queue, this giant queue, probably takes you 20 minutes to walk through the empty queue. That's how big it is. I feel like I'm touring an entire magical government building. I was fairly in awe, and I like to think that I'm the kind of person who can really have a level head about what I'm watching, what I'm taking in. But I just was like, holy crap, I'm in that movie. Like, I'm in that world. And okay, and this is the part where Ben, I don't know how much you followed. Are you aware of the storyline surrounding this ride at all?
No, not at all.
Okay. So the idea behind this ride, the actual ride is called Harry Potter and the Battle at the Ministry, is that it actually fills in a piece of Harry Potter canon, one that actually has not been answered yet, which is what happened to Dolores Umbridge, the villain played by Imelda Staunton, the sort of disciplinarian fascist who takes over Hogwarts in the fifth book and movie, and then eventually takes over the entire government working on behalf of Voldemort. And the gist of this ride is you've arrived at the Ministry of Magic on the day of her trial, and you're there to attend it and watch what happens. So the queue is setting this up. Like, you enter a room full of portraits discussing modern events. You meet some animatronic characters who sort of recap you about what's going on. And each room does a really fantastic job of using like dialogue and scenery to clue you in about what's going on. So even if you half pay attention as you wander the queue, you understand that Dolores Umbridge is on trial today and you're here to see the verdict. And naturally, like I said, it's a theme park ride. So as you enter your ride vehicle, which is the magical elevators seen in the Harry Potter movies and go up, down, side to side, things go wrong. And I'll leave it from there, other than to say that Imelda Staunton is essentially the lead of this ride. She is a fantastic actress, and it's very fun to see her in a theme park setting. The ride itself, this is real next-gen stuff. I don't want to describe what the ride vehicle is. The entire experience is designed to really mask and hide what your vehicle is and how it moves. So I won't spoil it here, but if you want to know the tech, you can go find Universal patents. They are out there. But this is the first Harry Potter ride of the three that Universal's built that actually fills in the canon and feels like it's answering incomplete questions from the films and books. So you really feel like you have a lot in stake story-wise here if you're invested at all in the franchise and these characters. And the sets are massive. It's a combination of practical stuff and screens. And the way the ride vehicle moves is truly remarkable. It's not quite ready for prime time. That was made clear to us. We were among the first members of the public to actually ride it. It was only open to press during the day because they're still trying to get it right for opening day. It's not quite there yet. So I'm going to try to say as little as possible beyond that because I know that it's not quite ready. I will say that it did break down on us the first time we rode it for about 2 minutes, which allowed me to see how one effect was pulled off, which was actually really, really neat. Then we were allowed to ride it again with no issues at all. So all I'll say beyond that is I remember riding at Islands of Adventure, The Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man, this theme park ride, you know, a few miles away at Universal. you know, back in early 2000s and thinking, wow, this is how theme parks are now, huh? I guess this is just, they're just this good now. And Battle of the Ministry feels that way. It is, like I said, brand new, largely untested tech. We can feel the untested element at play. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that the team can get together, because I want people to be able to experience this the way I did. But yeah, it felt next gen, and it felt like Disney. It felt like Universal looking at Disney's Rise of the Resistance ride, their Star Wars ride across town, and saying, "Okay, we see you, Disney. But how about this?" So if you're a theme park fan who likes the theme park Cold War between those two, and like them, and like watching them escalate as they have been for the past 20 years, this is the next step in the escalation.
Very cool. All right. So do you want to go to the next land now, or what do you think?
Real briefly, we'll take a break after this, but there, if you returned, the next thing we did was the big giant roller coaster at Epic Universe called Stardust Racers. And this is a extremely fast, extremely intense, really impressively smooth launch coaster. It's actually two roller coasters running side by side, and they launch together going extremely fast, and the tracks intertwine. So it looks like you're having lots of near misses, lots of near collisions, all simulated, of course. It's the kind of roller coaster that I found myself shouting out loud while riding it. And I don't shout out loud on rides. I never do that. And I found myself completely lost for words. We ended up riding it twice. We rode both sides. If you're able to, when you're there, ask for the right side. It's a little bit better. But both sides are great. And yeah, this is just a really spectacular roller coaster. I mean, Universal's been owning the coaster space for a few years now, and this is just them saying, like, hey, there's no real theme here. It's not based on anything. It's just a space fantasy aesthetic on top of a really fast, really intense roller coaster built to make you feel like you're about to fly out of your seat. I had a great time on this. We'll talk more about the area it's in when we come back from a break, because that is the one area of Epic Universe where I'm not so sure, but I think we'll save that as our cliffhanger.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
When it comes to fungicides, there's only one way to spell yield. N-E-O. Miravis Neo is the 2024 number one retailer recommended corn fungicide for a reason. It dominates spots, rots, blights, and stress to out-yield competitive brands like Veltima. And there's 6 years of university data to prove it. Ask your Syngenta retailer about using Miravis Neo for more yield more often.
Based on 2024 Stratus Retailer Efficacy Study. Always read and follow label instructions.
All right, Jacob, take me to the next land. What'd you do next?
So I want to linger in the hub section real quick. This is the Celestial Park. Like I said, this is the sort of neutral themed area that connects all the various worlds. I wish I could say I loved Celestial Park. There are moments of staggering beauty in it. There are incredible statues, architectural choices that are lovely. They planted so many trees and so much foliage all across this area. In a few years, when all that grows out, it's going to look beautiful. And I definitely want to encourage Universal to keep on creating new areas, because as much as I love seeing familiar worlds brought to life, I think that completely new stuff like this, it should also exist in a theme park space. The problem is that Celestial Park is a lot of concrete, just not a lot of shade, just not enough benches. And since the worlds are all very separate, which allows them to feel very contained and complete, it means that every single time you want to get to a new area, you need to exit that land and trek across Celestial Park again. And I was staying hydrated. I was applying sunscreen. I'm in pretty good shape. And even I was finding myself exhausted by Celestial Park by the end of the day. I was feeling wiped out. It became a running joke amongst our group. Like, well, if we got to trek across Celestial Park again. And this could be solved. When if they had bigger trees, or they had more benches, or there were more shaded walkways. But right now, it doesn't have that. And if I was Universal Park Ops, my main concern opening day would be watching people getting heat stroke and slush to the park, because it's going to happen in Florida weather in the summer. And it's the one area of the park where I look at it and I go, okay, this isn't there yet. This needs to be nurtured. They need to find solutions to this. And if you're listening to this and you're planning your vacation, bring a hat, bring sunscreen, and don't skimp on drinking water, because I was able to be comfortable and satisfied physically within the other four sections of the park, but Celestial got tough. And I think, and especially if you're somebody who's prone to heat stroke or prone to dehydration, just be careful. And I really, really hope that Universal is going to hear some of the feedback about this section in the next 6 weeks before opening and takes that seriously, because I really think they need to.
Yeah, man. I'm kind of surprised that they would design it in such a way where it forces you back into the center of the park like that, because you're talking earlier about like other parks, and Disney, I think, is maybe the prime example of this, where like there is that blending between lands, you know? And yeah. When you were describing it, I was thinking that there were tunnels, you know, maybe a central tunnel, like kind of in that Celestial Park area, but also like separate tunnels, like kind of at the other end of those individual lands. And it sounds like that's not true. And they just like immerse you in that world. And then you just have to turn around and go back out the way you came in, which seems like kind of an unnecessary bottleneck, like on a design level. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm torn up, because it means that when you're in that world, you're in that world. Since there's only one way in and out, it leads to a genuine sense of you having gone somewhere. And since you can't leave Burke and go right to, you know, Wizarding Paris, the thematic suggestion is that Celestial Park is the hub from which you go on your journey, which is really cool in its own way, because it gives Celestial Park an identity. And Celestial Park has stuff to do. Like I said, it has a lot of restaurants, it has a carousel, it has a loose theme of it being this community, this intergalactic fantasy, you know, space community from which adventurers and explorers can head out and go to places. So thematically, it really does work. And when Celestial Park, like I said, I don't want to say fixed, but when it's matured a bit, I think it could be a place where people find meaning and find a connection. But right now, as it is, it's just a heat stroke waiting to happen. And I like I said, put up some umbrellas, Universal. Please, umbrellas.
I mean, I don't want to be too cynical, Jacob, but just thinking about the practicality of that, it means that you have to walk all the way to the very end of each individual portal that you walk through, each individual land, and then turn all the way around and recover that same ground, which cuts down on the amount of time that guests have to experience the park, experience the attractions or whatever. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, on a really great hike, for example, when you go one way, you have one experience. And then when you turn around and come back, sometimes the views will be so amazing that you never even realized what you're missing out, because you didn't look behind yourself on the way in. Is the design component of all of these lands such that it feels like it's worth it to walk backwards? Because as a guest to the park, you're really missing out on a lot of time there. So hopefully that experience would be worth it going back out that same way.
Yeah, it will depend on how you choose to explore each land. But each land is generally built circularly, even if it's not obvious. It's not like each land is a perfect circle. But if you walk left or right and keep moving, you will eventually circle back to where you started. So there, you only necessarily will backtrack if you choose to backtrack. If you follow the organic layout of the land, you will see everything and end up where you started without having to feel like you've double backed, which is how we explored it. I feel like maybe other people will have more difficulty, but I definitely couldn't help but notice that every time we went out, by the time we saw the last thing in the land, we had ended up right at the start. So I do think that there's no required backtracking as long as you sort of go with the flow. But yes, I do think this is going to be the topic of conversation amongst people when they get to the park, because they've definitely traded convenience for immersion, and whether that's what people want. I don't know. It worked for me, but like I said, I'm also, I also knew how to handle myself in the Florida heat. I'm not sure everybody will.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're tapped into the theme of the theme parks, and I think you appreciate that and just design stuff maybe more than somebody who is just there for the roller coasters or something like that, for example. So
yeah, if you're just here for roller coasters, if you're just here because you want like thrills, this may not be the park for you. I mean, the rides are exciting, but they're story and they're very story driven. Immersion is the key word here. This is a park that's built about, hey, do you want to be part of a story? And do you want to be a character in these stories?
Yeah.
I mean, you'll have a good time on a roller coaster, but this is definitely a place built for beauty first, a beauty and story above all else.
Cool. All right, so take me to the next world.
Okay, I'm sorry we're going so long here, but this is my favorite world of the bunch. This is Dark Universe. This is the Universal Monsters area, and it has the same name as the Dark Universe aborted film franchise that they tried to start with Tom Cruise's The Mummy film from 2017, but otherwise has no connection beyond it being a updated take on the Universal Monsters. And I've long, been a Universal Monsters fan. I love those guys, Dracula, Frankenstein's Monster, and Invisible Man. And I have an entire article on the site about this topic, but this kind of feels like what Dark Universe always should have been. It feels very traditional while feeling very modern. It updates everything you want from the classic Universal Monsters vibe while also keeping one foot in tradition. The theme here is that you're entering a European village called Darkmoor, and all the old Universal Monster movies happened. Like there are Easter eggs and references that if you look for them, you'll find them saying that the Karloff Frankenstein films happened, the Bela Lugosi Dracula stuff happened, but now it's modern day and the people living in this, very, very cursed village now just have to learn to get by in a land where, going outside means you may get killed by a vampire or a werewolf. every employee we met was kind of tapped into the theme of their land. Like in Burke, they always referred to guests as Vikings, like to say, hey, Vikings, gather over here. But this is where they take it to a next level in Dark Universe. I noticed it very quickly that every single time I bought a souvenir, for instance, or I bought a drink or got some food, they never told me have a nice day. I was always told good luck, which was a great little tone setting vibe. And even the people working in the gift shop were very much not going overboard with it, but they were in character. They were acting like they were actually in the location, and there were monsters around, and that backing up my purchases was on equal footing on their mind as the fact that there were monsters nearby. So it wasn't being played over the top. It wasn't being played goofy, but it definitely lent this sort of vibe of, yeah, we know it's a problem. We know it's a monster problem here, but what are you going to do about it? Which I think is a really, really fun setting for a monster land.
Yeah, that's great. It reminds me of the Haunted Mansion and the way that Disney employees or cast members, as they're called, interact with guests just in that ride. But it seems like that kind of thing blown up into that entire Dark Universe section of Epic Universe.
Yeah. And then the main ride here, if once you enter Darkmoor, the big site at the back of the street is Frankenstein Estate. And this is meant to be the big castle where Dr. Frankenstein built his monster. And we've returned, and we're essentially getting a tour of the castle via his great-great-granddaughter, Victoria Frankenstein, who has built a new monster and has set about on a mission to capture all the Universal monsters to prove that she can, control all of them, and has imprisoned them in the catacombs beneath her castle and has invited us on a tour. And that's the setup for the main ride of the area, which has the cumbersome title of Monsters Unchained, the Frankenstein Experiment. And this ride is just an absolute blast. I have a full article going up online where I break down why I think this ride in this land represent what a modern take on Universal Monsters can and should be. But this ride is, no spoilers, but so many robots, so much cool tech. This is an incredible, scary, funny, exciting, really dangerous feeling trip. The basic premise here is you arrive in the end of the pre-show. Victoria Frankenstein, introduces you to her new monster. They're all beautifully made animatronics. And reveals that she's captured Dracula in her prison And yeah, she wants, and like, how else to prove that she is the best at controlling life and death above anyone else on Earth than to capture Count Dracula. Dracula in the pre-show looks right at everybody in the audience and vows to escape and get revenge. And you can guarantee you that things go wrong from there as the ride begins. And it's such a great cinematic setup. The idea of being trapped in castle catacombs, in a prison built by Dr. Victor Frankenstein's great-granddaughter with a bunch of monsters who are rightfully pissed off. Like, so Ben, why wasn't this the first Dark Universe movie? Like, why did Universal Creative at the theme park section get this so right when Universal Pictures got it so wrong?
Yeah, man, that sounds so awesome. And like, just the immersive quality for somebody who loves movies and especially older films, just going into a world that sounds like they really treasure and cherish the foundation on which this whole thing is built, which is those original movies, but also they aren't fully stuck in the past, which I think is like a really important distinction to make. The fact that they kind of modernized it, but still are paying like loving tribute to it in a way that doesn't sound like kind of obnoxiously nostalgic. It sounds like it really would work very well for me. So of all the places that you've described so far, this is the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, and I'll give you an idea of the aesthetic here. I mean, it's like you're in this gothic castle, and there's Tesla coils, electricity, and all the old school tech you expect from Universal Monsters. But like I said, no spoilers for the ride itself, but in the queue, there's a sequence where you get to watch, essentially, Victoria Frankenstein has assembled all this footage of her capturing Universal Monsters. So you're watching this Blair Witch-style found footage photography, essentially shot by her team of her capturing the Creature of the Black Lagoon and the Mummy and all the other monsters. So the idea is that this is modern day. This is meant to be 2025. And so watching this very modern scientist and her modern technology being blended with the old school stuff, it works in a way that I was not expecting. I was pretty bowled over by it.
Awesome. Okay, so anything else you wanted to mention about this area before we move on to Super Nintendo World?
There is a roller coaster called Curse of the Werewolf. It's fun. I liked it, but it's also clearly we need one more ride in this section. So let's put a coaster here and give it a werewolf theme. I liked it, and it actually does fit. It fits better than I thought it would, but the other ride is the main attraction. And I also will say that if you have time, the Burning Blade Tavern, which is literally a windmill that periodically catches on fire as a tribute to the 1931 Frankenstein film, is a great place to relax, especially since there are actors in there who are role-playing as monster hunters who will swap stories with you. And also the restaurant, The Steakhouse, which is the title's a pun because it's a vampire-themed restaurant run by vampires, and it literally feels like you're walking through a haunted house as you explore it. So if you're going to Epic Universe, if you're not going to eat or drink, go to the establishments and enjoy the theming.
Very cool. All right, so Super Nintendo World, I think, is the last one that you haven't really talked about yet. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I'll go the lightest in this one because, like I said, this is a recreation of a land that exists at Universal Parks. It's really visually impressive. Like, being in the Mushroom Kingdom is awesome. And this one has the Donkey Kong expansion, which is only also at Universal Studios Japan, not in Universal Studios Hollywood. And it really is, like, if you grew up playing Nintendo games or if you still play them like I do, it really is incredible how well they captured this. Just the colors and the visuals and, you know, show me an animatronic piranha plant from Mario and I'll never get tired of it. I guess my main issue here is I'm not sure I'm the audience for the rides in Super Nintendo World. The Mario Kart ride is an AR experience where you essentially go through a Mario Kart level on a slow moving vehicle while speed is simulated by the AR goggles you wear, which create, you know, digital images in front of you. And it's interactive. You can like shoot shells and turn the wheel and get points and try to do better than other teams. And I'm the kind of theme park guy who likes to sit there and let it happen to me. I don't like shooting games. I don't like games where you're like actively having to participate in the ride. But I know people who do and people who really enjoyed it. So I'll leave it there. Similarly, the Donkey Kong ride, which is a brilliant setup. Ben, did you ever play the Donkey Kong Country games on Super Nintendo?
Yes.
Do you remember the minecart levels where like you're driving that minecart and you jump over the gaps?
Yeah, yeah.
This ride is a roller coaster that simulates that, where you look forward and the track is busted and incomplete, and invisibly the car is supported by the side, so you literally are leaping over sections of the track. So
wow, you're physically doing it? It's not just like happening on a screen?
Nope, it is a roller coaster where it simulates the up and down of actually leaping over a destroyed Donkey Kong Country minecart track.
Wow.
It is a joy to watch. Like there's videos online of people filming it from the outside, like the areas where you can see. And it's astonishing to watch like the visual impact of people inside these Donkey Kong minecarts as they leap over gaps and like over areas where there are no tracks. I will say this one is a little physically rough. As a 6'4" person in my late 30s, I felt this one. But it's also a minor enough coaster in terms of speed and height that I think maybe the intended audience here will be, you know, younger kids who are maybe, you know, who are too young for Stardust Racers and too young for, you know, the scarier rides at the park. So kids whose spines aren't made of glass yet are going to love this one. It's called Minecart Madness. And I really respected it. It's one where I'm so glad I wrote it. Like, it's so clever. But my back says this is like a one-time per visit ride for me if I ever go back.
Okay. Any closing thoughts about Super Nintendo World? Anything you wanted to mention there?
It's very vertical. I will say as much. There are elevators for people who, you know, need them. But be prepared for stairs. That's one thing I would say about this. Be prepared to go up and down a lot in Super Nintendo World, which the verticality is what gives it so much visual joy. But once again, in this case of Epic Universe trading ease of transport for like genuinely stunning visuals, which once again I think could prove controversial amongst regular people who aren't weirdos like me, who are happy to walk 10 miles through a park to make sure they see everything.
Okay, so I guess 20,000 foot view on this whole thing, Jacob. You were kind of telling me beforehand that you feel like this is like a real game changer overall. So I guess, is there anything you can put your finger on specifically that makes you feel that way? Or is it just the collection of all these little details that you've already been talking about?
Well, I guess let me use an example. The day after Epic Universe, I went and visited the other Universal theme parks in my own time. I love these places. I've been there numerous times. I always have a great time. I still had a great time. But you start to see, like, for example, Universal Studios Florida. You walk through some of the older sections and you realize, oh, these were built 20, 30 years ago, some of them. And they're really showing their age. Then you visit the Diagon Alley section, which is one that there's their second Harry Potter themed land. And immediately it's like, oh, yeah, this is the one that was built a few years ago. It is impeccably designed. The details are incredible. I can get lost in this world. But you step back out again, and suddenly you're in an area where it's like far less impressive. Similarly, at Islands of Adventure, the park next door, the Hogsmeade section, which, you know, also Harry Potter, you know, is just simply far more impressive than a cartoon lagoon.
I think that's right. Yeah.
the sort of like comic strip theme section from opening day, which is, still has its charms, but you look at it and go, oh yeah, this is old. This doesn't have the attention to detail and visual mastery that you see across the park. You even see that in some areas where like things are split, like the Jurassic Park section at Odds of Adventure has the opening day Jurassic Park water ride, which is still fun, but needs TLC. It needs TLC in a major way. It looks 30 years old. It feels 30 years old, but it's right next to the Velocicoaster, which is a brand new roller coaster that is like as good as Stardust Racers. It's a truly incredible piece of art. It is and everything about it feels modern and slick and refined. And so you can't get that whiplash in the other Universal parks. You're walking between the older sections and the newer sections, and you kind of go like, man, I wish every section felt as good to be in as these newer sections. And Epic Universe always feels good to be in. There's not a single corner of this park where I was not looking at something interesting, or I did not see something that delighted me. I'd be in Burke and a dragon would walk by. I would be in Wizarding Paris and I would walk by a little shop and see something in the window that compelled me to go check it out. I would be in Dark Universe and the Invisible Man would walk by as a walk around character, and I would interact with him and chat with him, or a character would appear with a violin to play for us and tell us history of the town. And Super Nintendo, it's the way the sunlight glints off the spinning gold coins, like that recreate the look of them from, you know, Mario games, and the way that you turn around and realize that, oh, I just walked through Peach's Castle from Super Mario 64. There's not a single, even Celestial Park, even in the sun-baked death trap of Celestial Park, Ben, statues in the greenery and the visuals of it are beautiful to look at. And this is, I only got to go inside one restaurant in Celestial Park, and you have so many restaurants there that weren't open yet or I didn't intend to check out. I want to see them all because every space I was in delighted me. And I'm really hoping this is what can stick. I'm really hoping that when the park is open and it's being thoroughly stress tested and there are people piling in here, like I said, we had pretty heavy crowds the day I was there, and I imagine it'll be heavier on opening days and months. But the magic I felt from being there just moved me. I'm a fan of curated spaces. I like it when somebody builds a space that's nice to be in. And this sometimes means theme parks, or it can be the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. If somebody put effort into a place to be, then I'm interested in being in that place and giving it the time of day. And I just felt like every single step I took in this park was giving me like the pleasure of being in a place that was designed to experience. And I don't know how coherent that is to people who are more casual theme park fans, but this really worked for me. And goodness, I'm hoping that what I felt on this preview day can really survive into the park's maturing and its opening.
That's awesome. All right. So last question I have, is there a space in Celestial Park that you can imagine 5 years down the line that they say, you know what, we want to build a Wicked Land or something like that? And is there a way, a spot where you can see an expansion making sense there?
Theme park nerds are all over this. There are every single existing land has expansion pads already. And I think there's room for, two more possible full lands. And there already are major rumors of Wicked coming into Epic Universe. Like, there are a lot of rumors about what Universal is doing next, but Wicked is a big one. And yeah, there definitely are. You can see, like, there's the space for expansions. I'll put it there. But no, they can't really turn Celestial Park into the Emerald City without damaging the park's, you know, design layout. But in terms of goals, it should be shade in Celestial Park and then more expansions.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, thanks for running all of that down. There are going to be multiple articles probably by the time you're listening to this about Jacob's experience there, and I encourage you all to click on those. I'm going to put at least one in the show notes, if not two, so definitely check those out. You can find more about Epic Universe at slashfilm.com. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
When even my easy run became impossible, my buddies told me to go to VA. I don't know exactly what I was exposed to while I was serving, but I know that because of the PACT Act, I qualify for VA healthcare and disability benefits. I get treatment from top doctors trained in military exposures, and I get monthly tax-free disability compensation. With VA healthcare and benefits, I can keep going. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.